It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Happy anniversary, Wayne.
Ah, you're a little bit late, but thank you very much.
You've been married for how long?
35 years and 2 days.
And only two women.
Wow, that's going to take some explaining.
Well, you, but you always explain it. There's a pre-96 Sarah and a post-96 Sarah, right?
Pre-94 and post-96.
Oh, I'm sorry, I got the date wrong.
Yeah, that 94 to 96 Sarah, we're not counting her. Oh. Yeah, a lot of people have heard her story. We've told it. I mean, God did a major rewriting in her life, and which caused a major rewrite in our marriage, because obviously I was not married to the same woman I thought I had married. So after complaining about false advertising and then ending up with this very different woman, we learned to love this woman. And actually, she's better than the first one. But the first Sarah was just totally conforming herself to everybody's expectations around her. Her parents, initially, and mine as her boyfriend and husband and pastor's wife and all the expectations that went with that. And Sarah ended up at...
It sounds like a contortionist.
Well, Sarah ended up in a real midlife crisis of not having a clue who she was.
Wow.
And not having any regard, and I mean almost no regard for her thoughts or ideas about anything. She was always trying to figure out what other people wanted from her and give her that. Mm. So for 20 years of marriage, I got everything I wanted. That's not bad for me.
That doesn't train you very well.
No, I mean...
Require some adjustment after that.
And there were signs, I even say to her, we had these long deals that, now you can't really want that. Because what do you really want? No, that's what I really want. That's what I really feel like God's doing. And she was just totally fitting into that space. And then God began to make known to her who she was, and she didn't have appropriate boundaries in her life, and everybody crossed them, and she had let people cross. She doesn't blame anybody else. She basically looks inside and says, I just didn't have a clue what I was about.
Wow.
So God rewrote that, and it was a scary time in our marriage. This is probably 15, 16 years ago, but yeah, scary time in our marriage. I'm not sure we're getting through this. I kept saying, when you find yourself, is it going to be with Julio the pool boy? She would say, no, it will be with you. I'm going, okay. So yeah, we ended up with this fabulous. I wrote a little tribute to Sarah on the blog page on Monday. What I've loved about our marriage is that we've always found our way into us, whatever it is. I mean, we don't see things the same way now about a lot of things, but we always find what is it that fulfills Sarah and fulfills me, and we find our way into that space however we can. And there are things that we don't. Sarah thinks golf's stupid, and so she tried, and I'm like, darling, be released from this burden. And she loves to garden. And
you both do different things out in the fields.
So there's space in our lives to be who God's made us to be. But, boy, I tell you, the joy we have now in a relationship, and now with a real person, not somebody who's trying to fit into what Wayne wants, but a real person. We've been mining that mine for a long time. It's been wonderful.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, we celebrated 35 years, but we're horribly busy. We had company last week. We got company again this week, which we're going to introduce in a moment.
We have another studio audience.
Another international studio audience.
Yeah, what is with this?
We're growing by leaps and bounds. But we also got the grandkids this week because my daughter is out of town with her husband.
That's right.
They want a trip. So I got the granddaughters here all week. We had company last week. Company came in yesterday again. I leave Friday for Mississippi. So life's just crazy right now, plus with all the other things going on and people, emails that need to be answered. I'm about ready to go to email bankruptcy. People.
You?
Take a break. Stop writing me for like a week or two. Give me a chance to get some air, catch up, and then I may have to throw it all out and start all over because I'm just overwhelmed.
I recommend it. I think it's marvelous.
I guess it is. But I just, people write and they really open their hearts up and it's hard not to want to respond.
Yes, I completely understand.
But I want to introduce to you a friend of mine.
Yeah, who's our guest?
I forget his name, but he's a good friend.
Longtime buddy.
Yeah, I'm not sure in what language to pronounce. He's Italian-Swiss with a French kicker accent. So, you know, it's really hard to
well,
know,
that kind of all melds in that corner.
I found out my name today was Vane's Djurzen, or whatever it was.
In Slovakian. Yeah, the Shaq translated as Buddha.
As Buddha.
Yeah, that
was hilarious.
That's a real good one. It's like... We didn't write a book named Buddha.
But at least behind, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce right, he can correct the pronunciation of his own name, but behind his back at least, I call him Silvio Viotti. Silvio.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
And we got in touch email, gosh, probably 8-9 years ago?
Yeah, a long time ago, yeah.
And why did you contact me?
Yeah, because a friend, yeah, oh. I mean... I didn't have a problem at this time. Now that I know I have one. Yeah, yeah. Oh.
Now you wish you hadn't said
that. Yeah, forget
troubler.
It. Oh, yeah.
I get that.
To be serious, we, about 8 years ago, we were in a bad situation with our church, a lot of troubles and questions, and a friend of ours told us to read a book called Naked Church, so we didn't know what it was about. We read it.
But the title interested you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a scary title.
Yeah.
What do they do?
What are they going
what
to talk about?
Where?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like one interviewer said to me, all I want to know is when and where y'all meet.
Yeah, what kind of cult is it? You know.
I don't get those details.
And,
so you got a copy of the book?
Yeah, I got a copy of the book. And it just put words on what... at the family we were living, and I realized I was not as crazy as I thought I was, which I know you're going to say something about.
No, I'm not. I don't think you're as crazy as I think you are.
Yeah, okay. exactly what I was saying.
I'm not sure that did you service right there, but...
I know, but yeah. It doesn't matter.
She's used to it.
Yeah, so used to it. And
he gives as good as he gets. So, you know.
Let me finish, please.
He's going to be nice here, so I look bad. But
yeah. Wait a minute.
You know. Somewhere between a French and a Slovakian accent, trying to understand which country we're
in. When I saw your name in Buddha book, I mean, you just keep quiet. And so,
appreciate that.
And so we found out that we were quite normal, and the thing we were living was not at all something that nobody had lived before, and so I was interested in this book and said, who is this guy? And we googled Jacobson, and we find out a live stream, and so we got in touch, wrote and emailed, and then it was at the time where the Jake story was online, and one chapter after another, and
that came out really fast, didn't it?
Yeah. And
new chapter up every week.
We were just waiting for the new chapter to come out and to read it, and so we were very happy to read this book, because it was so good for us. I mean, just putting what we lived was already there in the book, so it was...
Well, what happened in your own journey that you and Dominique got to this place? Even before you read The Naked Church or read any of those things, what was God doing in your lives? What was your insights? What were your struggles?
The problem was with... we were very genuine, how if you can say that, with in the last church we were, because we moved, and so we had to change church denomination, but in the last church we were in, we were there to help the pastor, supposedly, but there were some, we find out slowly and little by little that he was not very happy with us. We were a threat for him, and when we discovered that, we were just with the mouth down, and we say, well, why? How? Why didn't you tell us that? And they have problem with the authority, and we find out that the guy was not really a pastor. He was not made for that. A lot of things were not working correctly in this church, and we told the pastor, but you know, this guy here has some problem. Why don't you deal with it? I said, oh, but you know. And so a lot of things were not not right for us. And we tried to not to correct them, but to help this guy correct them. And all of a sudden, this guy had a burnout. Didn't show up. One Sunday morning, no pastor. So we were, what's going on here? And so we tried to yeah, the thing was, a lot of people came. He was inviting a lot of guests. Yes. And a lot of these guests were telling, you know, you need to listen to God, because God has something for your church here, but you have to listen to him. And we never did that. So when the pastor had his burnout, I was at the time part of the elders, whatever.
You say that with much respect.
Yeah. I didn't have my white beard at the time, but still.
Is that a bad word in French?
I was a 27-year-old elder.
Yeah. And I said, oh, maybe now it's a good time to listen to God.
Imagine that.
And, okay, the other people from the other elders said, okay, let's try. And so next Sunday morning, we said, okay, we're going to listen to God, whatever he has to say. If he has to say nothing, okay, we wait till he says something. But we did that maybe for 2 weeks. And then the number of people dropped dramatically. We were only from 50, we were in Sunday morning, we were maybe 15, so some people couldn't stand that, so they
was
had
it just
to
an awkward
start.
Silence of waiting.
Yeah. I didn't mind that. I was very happy because it was the first time I could do something like that. Just stay and listen and waiting for God to say something or, you know, whatever. But for the majority, it was too harsh to do that, and people were going around and not coming, and so what are we gonna do? So they started again with a program and stuff, and finally, after some struggles, we left. We went away because we couldn't stand the way it was working, the program and stuff. We were too much for us, and so we left and we stayed home. It was a little awkward at the beginning on Sunday morning to stay in the bed, have church with your wife. That was good.
Pillow fellowship.
Yeah. I like that a lot. And,
were you still listening?
But
were you still listening for God and all this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was he speaking?
Yeah. And so we are still listening to God also now, even now.
Yeah.
And it was kind of difficult for us because we were almost alone in the situation in the. As you can hear, I'm sure I'm come from the French-speaking part of Switzerland, and in this area there are a lot of evangelical churches, and well, we have everything, Reformed churches, Catholic and evangelical, and we have also Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons and everything. But a lot of Christian churches, and people just stay there, and when we were talking about what we were living, nobody understood. You know, they always come back, oh, it's not good that you are away from church, because, you know, it's like when you take out a stick out of the fire, it gets cold. And
yeah, like you can't survive just listening to God and in relationship.
Oh, no, you can do that.
Isn't it strange that our knee-jerk response out of the awkwardness of the silence is we better be busy about something.
Always.
As if somehow that's going to cover the nakedness of us not hearing anything.
Absolutely. That was exactly that.
And
that was exactly
it's
that.
Like, golly, what do you have to do to rationalize in your head that somehow, in the absence of my connecting to God in mm-hmm. a way that I understand and know, the challenge of how do you then feel fine about just being busy about religious stuff? I think as God worked in our own life, a sense of being unsettled with what everyone else seemed to be satisfied with. You're just going, like, I just feel completely out of sorts, and what's wrong with me? And then you find out, maybe nothing's wrong with me, maybe I'm asking some right questions. And then I didn't find it possible to sit there and pretend that it was okay.
And is it partly that, if we're going to start listening to God together and our 50 becomes 15... then we're like, okay, well, this can't be good. We better save it again. We better fix it. And that seems to be our bent. We've got to fix it. I'd rather be busy about something that makes no sense as to risk the uncertainty of, man, I've got to follow Jesus, and I don't know what he's saying yet, and I don't know how to find it, and other people would find it more comfortable, sing some songs, somebody tell me a lecture, I'll go home, I'm okay.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a choice many of us have faced in this journey. Are you going to follow what's truly happening in your heart, even if other people looking at you think you're nuts? And that's, I think that's a challenge we've all faced.
Well, I just think that I do find it now, I sort of look at the impatience as really strange, going like, you know, it's not my job to come up with his voice. If he's not speaking,
absolutely,
I can relax and rest and feel like, well, I'm not being given a big to-do list. And why do I want to invent one so as to feel what? And so, you know,
busy.
I just think, I don't know how God has changed the rewiring, because I do remember, gosh, that was a scary reality. Now, I think a decade of transition later, I look back and I go like, why in the world would I want to get busy to cover some sense of anxiousness if at the end of the day, I'm not really sure what he's asking of me? Because I sort of feel like clarity is on his side of the ledger. Not necessarily mine.
Yeah.
And when I sort of relieve myself of that burden, then it's not so hard to kind of just wait on him.
Yeah.
It's like, absolutely. If I don't know, I don't know. I am the minor brother in this relationship. I don't have the answers. I don't know what to do apart from illumination that he gives. And unless I can hear his voice, I don't even have the faith to go and do it.
Don't you love, I love the fact that those kinds of transitions happen. The things that used to be, how could we ever follow God without this?
Yeah.
And then some years down the street, you turn around and go, how did we ever try and follow God with that?
We that.
Yeah. Like, I still get the, how am I going to raise my kids to know God if they don't go to Sunday school? And my always first thought is, how are you going to raise them to know God if they do go to Sunday school? I remember having the earlier questions. I know.
I totally did. But it does feel like light years different, going like, no, because like my kids kind of sort through the normalcy of life as opposed to the event-driven to-do list.
Yeah.
And religion seems to give you the event-driven to-do list. And then somehow if you achieve all that, or you're ahead of everyone else on all that, then somehow, oh, you're really good. You're really passionate. And I'm like, no, you may just be really exhausted.
Usually that's very true.
Oh, yeah. That's
especially
true.
When
that's
I get caught
so
in
true.
Some of those things now. When I, because of, you know, the nature where I end up some days doing things with people, and I end up in one of those kinds of what didn't promise to be a religious event, but when you got there, it was only a religious event. There wasn't any life beneath it or beyond it. And you know, I go away from that going, why would you do that every week? I mean, I got caught there, so, you know, I understand.
On the off week, I got stuck.
Yeah, I got stuck there. So, but why would you go back every week and feel like, and almost the hype of the language, oh, this is so good, this is so powerful. I'm going, who are you kidding? Yeah. Really? What are you looking for that fills up your life? That's the question I had the last time I was in one of those deals. How can you be so empty that filled up something in you? Because that was emptier than life itself. Just we were all busy for God to be all yelling, screaming, and talking and chatter. But who goes away different? Who goes away closer? Who goes away with greater clarity on their life? They don't. They just wait for another meeting to come back and do spiritual things.
Absolutely.
But they still live their life in this vacuum spiritually.
I have this lady from that church where we love. It's an old lady. She was very, very loving. And we met her in our town because she was making shopping over there. And she said, I went to this conference and it was so good. So a lot of people got their batteries
recharged.
And I was, why do you have to go there to have the battery recharged? So it means that after that, the battery goes down and you have to go to another meeting to get the battery recharged. That sounds so weird. I mean,
that's how you keep that's how you keep the stick hot.
Yeah.
You keep running back to the fire.
It's nuts. But so what's the rest
of the... Are you supposed to be burning the stick? No one with the fire ever asked that question. You know, I just kind of wondered now, because I mean, I do. I guess, like, is it that all sticks are meant to burn, and at the end of the day, you get a bunch of burned-out sticks? I'm not sure that that is what it looks like to have life with God. I thought they're supposed to be bearing fruit, not just becoming singed.
Or charcoal.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a point to be made here.
I do think, yeah.
But not by those who want to keep filling up this thing to give it some sense of worth and to pay the bills.
But even, you know, that sense of getting your batteries charged, if that happens, part of me is going like, well, great. If it's like when you got together, did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the people? Did you find some connectedness with God? If you did, fantastic. Got no argument. I have nothing to criticize. But could you have had a nice walk on the beach? Could you have taken a stroll down this, you know, city market or something like that? And isn't that just
city market? How many strolls do you take down a city market?
Well, when I'm in Europe, we do.
You're thinking European.
I'm thinking European for our guests. I'm wanting to make sure it makes sense.
He goes down to the city market all the time.
You know?
Yeah. Well, what's a city market?
Well, whatever you do, make shopping. You know?
Well, I don't know why he came to the States, but a week before he got here, a package arrived in the mail. We opened it, and it's a gun.
Yeah.
It's got his name on it. Yep. Silvio. Okay, so a gun sent here.
Do you have issues with Wayne?
Oh, we're not giving him the gun until he leaves. Actually, it's a paintball gun.
There you go.
Yeah.
So how do you plan to get that back to Switzerland?
He says he can put it
in a suitcase.
Okay.
What's your problem?
Well, so long as you're flying that way, I suppose that's fine.
Yeah. Oh, I did that before. With a paintball gun. It was okay.
It's okay. Anyway, then as you went on this journey some and were kind of dealing with some of the life change stuff, we started communicating more because you were translating the Jake book, the So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. Is that what you started with?
Yeah, I stopped. In fact, I started with The Naked Church because I found it
into
French, never been published, and maybe I have to rewrite it because I just did it like that. It was
We're
so.
Not publishing
I was
saying the English version anymore.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
And then I translated the
So I don't go to church.
So
anymore.
I don't want to church
and
anymore.
And that I finally finished while you were.
Yeah, it's finished. It's published, and we share it with a few friends, and they liked it, and they shared it with other friends. But you have to be. In a way, you have to be ready to read this book and to understand.
The title's a little challenging to the regular churchgoer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But usually what happens is they analyze the book and they say, it's an American way of thinking. You know, they like that and this and that. They don't go to the meaning, real meaning of the thing. For them, no. They just analyze it and said, it's good, but you know, this and that. And they don't catch it, or if it's something that they feel in their heart, they go with it and they understand what it means. And
that's why I asked you what was going on in your heart before you read The Naked Church, because you can read The Naked Church and just go, either the guy's out of his mind, or ooh, I really love this, but nothing happens in your life because of it. It's just a book you read. It kind of. But if God's already inviting you into a reality, then those things.
Yeah, it was a long for us. It was a long journey with God. I can see that now that He prepared us, and this book was at the right time. You know, we were ripe to read this book and to. Wayne and
I was in Germany a couple of years ago, and he said, hey, if you're over in Germany, come visit us in Switzerland. And Sarah was flying over for the tail part of that journey, tail end of it. So we both went over and spent 5 or 6 days with them in Valorbe. Is that how you say?
That's right.
A beautiful little village. They've got a home on top of a museum right on the river that flows through the town. It's just mountains all around. It's just spectacular. And we had five of the most hilarious days. I mean, we just had a ball laughing and talking about this journey. And Raphael, their son, he was a 20-year-old or 21-year-old at the time. And he would laugh so hard he'd leave the room in tears. He was going, you're worse than my dad. I'm going, no one's worse than your dad. So we had that. And so we had a great time. All the four of us, we just had a wonderful time. And then we heard they're coming. Now, what brings you to the States on this trip?
Well, I had a conference in Las Vegas. IT conference, because I work in IT. And so we said, as long as we are here, I'm here. My wife came to join me, and...
And you have an anniversary, too, on this month.
Yeah. What was it already? Oh, yeah. 30th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, you're just youngins, but they're celebrating their 30th out here.
Well,
yeah.
Congratulations to you as well.
Thank you.
What have you learned about marriage in 30 years that's helped Dominique stay with you?
Ho, ho.
Careful, she could listen to you.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm thinking before I'm talking now.
And for those of you that are saying, why didn't we have Dominique on? We invited Dominique to join
us. Yeah, I know, but she's too shy. And
English is not her first language.
No, it's not mine as well.
Not yours, but she's...
Well, I learned a lot. I learned how to adjust with people, how to forgive. That was hard. I mean... You know, Italians are a little macho and stuff, and I think for me it was hard to recognize my faults and my when I was doing wrong, and to get along and.
Totally.
And then first when you are married, and then with the kids.
Yeah, they kind of.
They don't let you go.
Marriage exposes your selfishness, and then the no choice anointing of the kids being so dependent kind of kills it. And you sort of go like, "Well, I see the wisdom of the family right there." It's kind of like, I got people around me. I can't fake them out. I can't pretend all the time. So they see me the way I am. But I think it's in that context that we finally learn what it is to be loved.
Oh yeah.
And as a survival skill, you learn to love.
And I think it's great.
Yeah, it's good.
I wish all people did. I don't see families doing that, but I think it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a great.
So you guys have been on a similar journey through this whole.
Yeah, she was. Yeah. She was ahead of me, because I come from a background of pretty strict environment.
Authoritarian.
You know, it's called the Brethren. I don't know if you heard about
it. The Brethren Assembly, yes.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same here in the States and in Europe.
Yeah.
But this kind of thing where it's like, it's more like a clan or a tribe, you know, and if you leave the tribe, then you are...
You've left God.
Yeah, totally. So
and in the family.
And I'm the fourth generation that's been raised in this kind of thing. My great grandfather knew Jesus by way of the Brethren, and then my grandfather, father, and me, we were just raised there. And so when I had to, I had some issues with some doctrine they have, and. My wife Dominique was not raised in this environment, so she was ready to leave already, but she found out that I have to make it in my own time, so she let me free and to find out that what was wrong. And one day I said, okay, that's enough, I cannot stay there. So we went to in an evangelical church then, and so on and so on, and finally we out of the system.
Moved right out through, right on through.
There you go.
Yeah, but
you graduated.
Yeah, but
congratulations.
That's how I see it. If you kind of move into a place where it's like, you know what, there's blessing there.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it can be wonderful, but at the end of the day, if you don't find your way to your own relationship with God, of a direct friendship, then. I don't think you ever get to that place where you do get that settled sense of rest of going like, I'm still growing, I'm still being changed.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But I'm not having to just manage shame. And I think that's so much of what gets appeased in the whole religious activity is, if I do all this, that seems to kind of cover that part of me that I've embarrassed or I think needs to be fixed.
Yeah, yeah. But it took a long time, about 13 years from the time I left the Brethren till the time I left the last church we were in.
It's 14 years, so that transition, and then you've been kind of out now the way you are for the last...
For the last...
10 years?
About that.
Are you finding other people in Switzerland with a similar heart for these things?
Yeah, but very few. Yeah. Very few.
I get some email from Switzerland. I always send them your address.
Yeah.
I got a friend over there. Contact him. See,
yeah,
we got some folks connecting over there.
Yeah, it's, we have some very good friends. We understand each other. It's nice. We met. I have one who is older than me, which is amazing because usually old people they don't change like that. But him, he just left the system. I remember 6-7 years ago, and he's about 67 or like that. I was amazed, and a younger guy, and so we meet sometimes for lunch, and we just be together, have fellowship, and laugh and pray and whatever. I like that a lot. And yes, it's kind of hard for us not to have more people we can share with, or just like have fellowship like that, but. It will come. We have glimpses here and there. Like I had an email recently from an apprentice. I am in charge in my department, IT department, of a young guy. He's 20, and I had to take care of him. I was his master in an apprenticeship.
Master. Wow.
Yeah, that's what we call it.
We call him mentor here, but okay.
Yeah, no, master, and he was my
master and slave.
He was my. Yeah,
Padawan.
I was going to say it.
Yes, my.
And he's finishing right now, and he has his last exam right now, and he has to present something in front of experts and stuff. And I'm here in the States, and I would have liked to be there to to encourage him. And so I sent him an email and said, "I'm sorry, I cannot be there, but I hope you. I'm sure you will do your best, and it's going to be all right." And he sent me an email back. He said, "Oh, but I liked being with you and what you done to me. You helped me at the beginning, and that you let me go trying to be independent. And I really appreciate our relation. You were a good guy." Right. And this was, oh, that's me. He's talking about me now. Yeah, I like that. And so that brings me a lot of, I was happy to read that, because that's the kind of thing I really would like to be. I mean, just, yeah, he said, I appreciate that you were you.
Yeah.
You were you.
Yeah, that's not something you were doing. That's who you are.
And that's encouraged me a lot, because I've learned not to be me. I've learned, you have to, if you go with somebody, you have to evangelize him, because tomorrow maybe he'll be dead, and if you didn't talk to him about Jesus, he'll be in hell, but if you did, maybe he'll be saved. So, and this whole concept, of you have to evangelize and talk to Jesus about everybody you encounter, that was part of my culture, Christian culture. And when you can be free of that and just be you and love people and whatever comes.
It seems.
Because how well did that work?
Yeah.
The other pressure, most of the time we didn't do anything and felt guilty. We couldn't think of anything to say. It wouldn't sound stupid. And so then we lived most of our time guilty because I sat on an airplane. I didn't share Jesus with anybody. Now, I don't know about you, I find way more opportunities to talk to people just out of the naturalness of being who we are. Rather than trying to manipulate the conversation to where we'd like it to go.
Well, I think when God strips the religious mindset from the way in which you're thinking, it's as if what you gain is a normal life that is fun and enjoyable, and you can find him in it, as opposed to this treadmill of... Because I never thought I prayed enough. I never thought I did any of the good things enough to get to that place of going like, oh, I'm okay.
I know. I felt
the
same.
There's always somebody that did it better or did it more. There's the church down the way that seemed to be bearing fruit in all the ways I couldn't. And it's just so much of that feeds on our sense of insecurity in terms of, what is it that Jesus did that there is now therefore no condemnation? Somehow that was missing from so much of what we were doing. And we're like, that's a really nice verse, but what's the key that makes that one work? And it doesn't work in this context.
Yeah, I like what you said earlier, because I think you should read the Gospels, and we're kind of freshly working through that with some of the project that we're on. But you see that 99% of what happened in the life of Jesus happened in the course of a day. It didn't happen in a specific event that he had planned and put together. Yeah. And for me, my spiritual life was fully the opposite of that 20 years ago. The only spiritual stuff that happened, happened in events that we planned. Mm-hmm. And we go, blessed by it. It wouldn't even shape your life outside that event, even though you wanted it to. You would just be back to being guilty and trying to do stuff you can't do. And there was a big disconnect. I remember we were talking with a group, small group of people. We were trying to figure out, how do we touch our city for God? And we'll go down to the malls and we'll try to, you know, pray and seek people and we'll try to have conversations. And it was all this manipulative stuff, even though it was good in that we were trying to get it out of the box. But then we were still in the artificiality of, I'm going to go up to a total stranger and initiate something of which I want to give an outcome. Instead of, I'm just going to live my life. And as God unfolds out of my life during a day, the day itself becomes incredibly spiritual. And the activities, as we talked about earlier, the activities become more suspicious. Is that really what's real? Because when Jesus was engaging a woman at a well or having dinner with the Pharisees, or it was in the normal course of a day how he was intersecting people and how God was making himself known. I love that.
You know, I don't know how to make life happen. And in that language, that seems a little bizarre. But the reality is I know what it is to experience the gift of His life being given in a moment, and I know what it is to respond to that. I don't know how to make it happen if I don't first receive it as that gift.
Yeah.
And it seemed like so much of the religious structure sort of put the burden, and because I was one of the guys in charge. It put the burden on me, like, you better make it happen.
Yeah.
And you're going, like, but maybe they don't know this. I know I can't. I mean, that was such a terrifying role.
But you can make it look like it's happening. That's the danger.
I did figure that out.
Yeah,
and that is the danger
happen,
because
but you can, make
you
it look
can
like
almost
it's
fake yourself out and say, well, see, wasn't that hot?
Yeah, that was awesome. Weren't we good? Yeah. You need your stick in this fire. Yeah.
And I do just go like, you know, yeah. And then we would rate ourselves like, how was that? And it's sort of like, yeah, but I don't know that that's, I mean, that is such a foreign mindset to me now. Yeah. Where you're just going like, to me, the joy of not having an exhausted religious overlay.
Oh, yeah.
Allows me to just go like, you know what? It's not as if I don't have demands and challenges, and I can't, you know, I can very easily get consumed with work. But the reality is, I don't have this guilt performance thing.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. The guilt is awful because, like you said, I never prayed enough, I never read enough, and nobody even told me to do it more. But the whole system puts that in your mind. You have to do it more because, you know, people like that.
I think the enemy, too. Isn't he acute? When things aren't going right in our life, well, you're not praying enough.
Yeah.
You're not righteous enough. God obviously can't bless you. And I think it's just that, not even, quote, unquote, the system in terms of, you know, religious
institutions. It could just be the voice of our enemy.
I think it's just religion itself, that whole inside thing of shame of, we're never good enough. You just can never fill up that bank enough.
Never.
To feel good about what you're doing. Any regrets about this journey?
What a stupid question.
That's my job on this podcast. Don't make fun of it. That's all I got.
No regrets at all. Come on. Oh, no. No. Now it's life. It's real life.
That's what I like to hear. It's real life, even though, gosh, we don't have all the religious friends we used to have. People look at us strange sometimes when they find out how we're living and what we believe.
Oh, yeah.
But then people always say, gosh, I wouldn't trade this reality
for
anything we had before. And I think that's important. For people who are staying at the beginning of the journey, going, oh, my gosh, my parents may hate me. My family's going to reject me. I don't know if this is worth it.
Oh, if you want to talk about rejection, my father didn't talk to me for 6 months when I left the brethren.
I guess.
But, you know, what's so strange is, sure, some of the discomfort of that may happen, but were they so in love with you when you were there? I mean, I end up, you know.
In their own way, but I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I look at that, and it's like, to me, the reality is exposed when all of a sudden, no, I'm not just following the band leader. I'm not just doing Simon Says with the religious guy up front.
Yeah.
And when all of a sudden you're responding to the Lord as best you understand. I mean, could you be wrong? Certainly.
Oh, yeah.
will I make mistakes? I'll guarantee it. But if in my sincere effort to follow him, someone is threatened by that or someone needs to criticize that, you're just going like, what's wrong with that?
See, the danger to me of religious thinking is religion cannot love what it cannot control.
Exactly. That's
and
true.
Part of that reversal of thought gets back to how can you possibly love what you are trying to control? I mean, you understand what love is, even from God's standpoint.
Yeah, there's no love in that.
There's no love in controlling person, in controlling someone to your desired outcome. Well, thanks for joining us today, Brother Silvio.
Anything else you
want to say before we're done today? And
no, I don't have anything to say.
Oh, you've had a lot. It's great to hear your journey.
It was nice to be with you.
We're going to get another paintball gun and shoot way now.
Yeah, I have
that
to find
fun.
Some.
Yeah,
do that tonight.
In the yard.
The Wayne Jacobson hunt. Get the guns. Yeah. I'm going out there.
Yeah, just bring your belt. Go, Wayne.
I wanted
fun.
To bring him
I was going to build a fire and bring my stick.
Well, you can do that.
That's what I was going to
do. You can do that.
While you're shooting me in a bunny costume.
Yeah, I wanted to buy him a bunny costume and have a bunny hunt.
I like you, Silvio. This is great.
Fortunately, he goes home on Friday.
Yeah.
And I go on to Mississippi.
Hunting season's over.
Bless you, brother.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.